The way we work is changing. Here at the Ministry of Defence, we've been taking a serious look at how our people can work more flexibly across the whole force. The armed forces offer a package of modern flexible working opportunities where operational capability allows. These have the aim of reducing stress, improving work-life balance, and helping people continue their careers through changing personal circumstances. In this series, you'll hear about our servicemen and women's experiences of flexible working, how it's helped them to perform at their best, along with some vital information about how flexible working might benefit you. Army Major Amanda Wilcox-Jones has been working flexibly since returning to work after maternity leave.
I joined Sandhurst back in January 2010, so I've done 11 and a bit years. I went straight from Sandhurst into the ETS. I went to be an education centre 2IC in London, in Woolwich, and then from there on to ICSC and then maternity leave.
And if somebody said to you, in the whole of the armed forces, where do you fit in? What's your USP for being there? What would you say that was?
So my CAP badge is really specialist. There's only about 270 of us, and we do a lot of training delivery. And then as we become more senior, we do a lot of training design and analysis and evaluation. So my USP is really my CAP badge in terms of the specialist educational learning and development capabilities that it provides the Army in order to develop its people.
And then you went on maternity leave. How did you find going on maternity leave, having been an extraordinarily busy and fulfilling role?
Well, yes, that's interesting. I think sometimes I forget about that feeling, because maternity leave ended up being incredibly traumatic. But I found it very strange. Everything you've learned and been rewarded for suddenly becomes not really of any use, because the little person that depends on you doesn't really care if you're good at Excel or can deliver a good points brief. They're more interested in, can you make them feel safe and feed them and care for them? And it sort of flipped everything that I had been valued for and I had valued in myself, I think, on its head, which at times is a little bit lonely. It took me a little while to become accustomed to that.
And did you want to go back to work?
So our little boy, he was due mid-September and he arrived mid-June. So he was 3 months early. He was just over a kilo and he was very, very poorly. And to top it off, we were on holiday in Malta. So 27 weeks pregnant and 2 days, I went into a pretty speedy labour and he arrived within 45 minutes. So we were lucky indeed to have made it to the hospital. We did a month in Malta in their neonatal intensive care unit before we were CASEVAC'd to Great Ormond Street for emergency brain surgery. And from there to a more sort of closer hospital where we did a further 2 months in intensive care before we were released home on oxygen and a feeding tube. And with a little boy who had been warned, had suffered severe brain damage. We had to just wait and see how that developed. So he's just started nursery, so he's two and a bit now. The oxygen's gone, the feeding tube's gone, he eats solid food, he just learnt to feed himself with a spoon, which is super exciting, really independent, lift his own cup. Physically, you know, the warning that we were given has certainly come to pass. He has quite severe cerebral palsy, although it appears at the moment to be affecting him physically but not cognitively. So whilst he can't really sit up at aged two, he's super chatty, really friendly, loves people. So we feel very fortunate indeed, because once you start talking about brain damage, you know, it's such a wide possibility of things that, you know, could happen. So I did 14 months on maternity leave with him, and I was whilst initially I'd always thought I'll do 9 months and then go back to work because I'd miss it. You know, I did miss it, but I was really torn because I had a very dependent child who had very specific needs and problems, and obviously a very, very full timetable of medical appointments. And I couldn't imagine when I was on maternity leave how I would balance a career or even any kind of employment alongside these new caring responsibilities I had as a new parent to a disabled child.
So what did you do?
Well, I am super lucky. So I got in touch with APC and my career manager, and I explained what had happened. And obviously, I kept everybody in close, closely informed because I'd gone on to maternity leave very early and had needed to let everyone know that we were out in Malta and safe. So I had a very supportive chain of command as well, and I spoke about flexible service, and I applied to do 60%, so that's 3 days a week. It was agreed. I did some keeping in touch days, which was brilliant. And the way that I sort of cut being able to leave Ranulph was my parents are about an hour and 10 minutes away, and they absolutely gave everything over the last year to care for him on the days where I was working. And that took us up to age two, which then meant he was able or eligible to attend a specialist nursery attached to his physio and occupational therapist in the same building, and with nursery staff that are really able to care for him and his needs and develop his potential.
When you were preparing to make that call, when you were preparing to get in touch and say, look, this is my situation, this in an ideal world is what I would like, how did you feel?
A little bit unsure because it's so new. I think it was April 2019 it was introduced. I was asking for it in probably around Christmas time 2019, so really very early in its introduction. And so I didn't know anybody on flexible service, and I wasn't really sure how likely it was that I would be given it, but I thought I needed to ask because without it, I can't go back to work full time. That's not possible. My parents couldn't have looked after Ranulph for 5 days, and I couldn't have put him into a non-specialist nursery. And we went to visit some, and they just said that we can't give your child any more than any other child.
So being able to work flexibly it was a life-changing moment.
Absolutely, and I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that. I love being in the army. I want to stay in as long as I enjoy it. I still enjoy it. I don't want to leave. And I was faced with this horrible decision between sort of me as Amanda and wanting to stay in the army and wanting the fulfillment of a career. And I do find the education aspect really fulfilling. Education changes people's lives, and I love that about my job and my role. And yet I found myself as a mother torn between leaving a child that needed me. So it was really difficult. So I dropped an email. I tried to look for some policy, which I confess I was a bit tricky to find. I found some sort of out of date guidance about the pilot, and then rang my clerk at APC, who was brilliant. Talked me through how to put the application in. I spoke to my chain of command early and said that this is what I'd like to do. They were really very supportive straight from the off. I think partly because they'd been kept so well informed about my situation, and I'd sent them little photographs of Ranulph in hospital and let them know when we'd arrived back on the CASAVAC flight from Malta. So that they were really. They'd bought in, I think, to our story as a new family. And my career manager was, very happy to agree it. So it was actually incredibly easy. It's a simple JPA action once you've got all the agreements in place. And there it was, starting back mid-August on 3 days a week for 12 months.
And you did the full year.
Yes, I did a full year on flexible service. And then what I've done is I had so much leave because you generate it, of course, on maternity. And when you work part-time, actually, it's very difficult to take leave because if you take 3 days leave, suddenly you're not at work for me from the Thursday evening until not the following Tuesday, but the following Tuesday. So what I've done is I've taken that leave. I was able to carry it forward from my brigadier, which is brilliant. And I now what I do is I use my leave to continue my part-time working arrangement, and that'll end on the 1st of April.
And that works for you to end then.
Yeah, it does actually. Better than I thought it might, because we are due a little baby. Ranulph keeps saying, "The baby in mummy's tummy, little brother or sister." So my plan at the moment, I found out last week, I've just been selected for subunit command, which in my cap badge is quite competitive. It's the testament to the support from my husband, the support from my chain of command in my part-time working environment. What I did worry about was if I'm only doing 3 days a week, how will I show to my chain of command my potential? I've got 40% fewer opportunities to do that, but I've got an incredibly supportive, really understanding chain of command who have seen past that completely. And I I got a report that took me to the board and got me selected for the officer commanding 77 AEC starting in sort of probably around September, October time next year. So I'll take 6 months maternity leave. And then when number two's 6 months old, pop them into nursery and hopefully they can just go to one that I can drop them off at myself that's nearby. And then I can head off to work as the OC.
You quite rightly are full of praise for the whole chain of command. But how much of a difference do you think it made from your part, keeping in touch, keeping them informed?
Absolutely. I think people understand stories. If you can explain your story so that they can understand the pressures you are under, actually, it's very difficult in many circumstances to say no to somebody if you are really in tune with what they're struggling with. And by, you know, when we were in Malta, we were having a weekly phone call with my 1RO just to let them know how we were, how Ranulf was, and, you know, whether we needed any support. And that was vital to keep the conversation alive, I think, for me, to remind me that there was a world outside of whatever neonatal unit we were in at that time. And then outside of my own four walls when we were back at home and I was looking after Ranulf, you know, with all his extra wires, oxygen in his feeding tube. And that was really important. So I felt like I was understood and listened to. And they understood what I was going through. But it did take a lot of effort from me. You know, sometimes I didn't want to ring each week because I was tired and it had been, you know, we'd had a difficult day in hospital. So it requires you to sell your story in a way that your chain of command will understand.
And are you the only person working flexibly in your unit?
My unit's really diverse. So I work in education branch in Army Personnel and Services Group in Army Headquarters. And my education branch is a real mix of regular, reserve, regular on flexible service, reserve on almost a full-time commitment, FTRS, and civilian staff, both on full-time and part-time. Because education is a whole force concept. It's for everybody. It can't just be run by the regulars. And so we've got a really diverse team. So I and myself run a team of 9 civil servants and 3 of them are full-time and the remainder are all on different days. So actually the fact that I work part-time is almost puts me in the majority rather than the minority.
Do people react differently or act differently to you because of your situation?
I don't think people really, I mean, outside of my team, I don't think anybody knows that I'm not in on a Monday and a Friday. I've got a very detailed out of office. It's signposts them to exactly who they need to go to within my team to address their issues. And, you know, it's only Mondays and Fridays I'm not there. So they've only got to wait 24 hours, really, to have an answer. And if it's really important, they'll go to my 1RO. But I think that's only happened twice in the year that then resulted in me needing to log on and do something about it.
Was it ever or has it ever been problematic?
Certainly not problematic. I think when I initially returned to work, there were a few frictions because people were just getting used to the idea that actually I wasn't in on a Monday and a Friday. And I also returned to work, return to work August, September time. And of course, that's coming up to the mid-year financial review point. So there was a lot of work needed to be done on my projects because I run quite large budgets to identify possible savings or underspends and whatever. So I returned to almost probably what is the busiest time of the year outside of the start of the new financial year. And so that did result in a couple of sort of emergency phone calls. Can you please lock on? But, you know, I could probably count them on one hand. And at the end of the month, that, you know, that had ceased. And we'd all found ways of addressing these issues without needing to call me up.
And it's quite clear what difference flexible working has made to you. What difference do you think it makes to defence?
It's a good question. I mean, I've done 11 years in the Army. I've had a lot of personal investment and training. The Army's paid for me to do a PGC, an MSc in education. I've attended 6 months of ICSE. I've had a lot of training investment. And if I had gone on to maternity leave and then subsequently left the Army, that investment would have been a waste, as well as the loss of somebody who didn't want to leave and wanted to continue working with the Army and in the Army. So, you know, it's made a difference Now, the army sacrificed, 60% of my days for 1 year, so something like 100 probably. And they've gained me for potentially 10, 20 years, maybe more if it's service till 60. So I think that the potential gains for defence could be huge in terms of retention going forward. It certainly retained me. And, you know, I've always been happiest in the army when I've been well managed, not necessarily when the job itself has been the best job. And I couldn't feel better managed, so understood, so supported. And that is such a rare thing. And I feel very grateful for the support that, you know, defence policy has given me alongside the personal support of my chain of command and my department. And that's really, you know, increased my own investment in the army and my desire to remain, because I also now want to, I'm going to go be an OC, I'm going to hopefully be a company commander and, you know, run the education centre. I could offer this support and understanding and good management to my subordinates. And that is really exciting.
That was Major Amanda Wilcox-Jones. So how does this all work in practice? Can anyone work flexibly? I've been talking to William Lynn, who leads Defence's Modernising Terms of Service team, which develops and maintains flexible working policy for the MOD.
We set up a team back in late 2019, and Modernising Terms of Service, or MTOS for short, kind of tries to do what it says on the team. So what we're trying to do is help the armed forces to become a more modern, flexible and attractive employer. And the way that we do that is by updating and introducing policies that try to make defence more responsive, more agile to its changing needs. And by doing this, we try to help to secure the right people, the necessary skills and behaviours in the right numbers with the right balance that defence needs.
Do you feel that there is a more urgent need right now to be doing something like this?
Yes. The advent of COVID-19 in many ways has helped to push us further down the road of modernisation at a much quicker pace than we had anticipated. So it's absolutely timely that we are doing these things. And the way that we do that is to work really closely with the single services to make policy updates where required and try out new ideas. And where we need to, we'll put interim policies in place.
How easy is it to do something as seismic as this for an organisation like the Ministry of Defence?
Well, given our size, given that we have three individual armed forces, Navy, Army, Air Force, each with their own distinct culture, it's a challenge. But as I said before, because of the changes introduced under COVID-19, where people overnight literally started to work remotely or work compressed hours or work in a different way, our job has been made much easier. Now we're finding that there is a lot of interest in the policies that we are developing, because moving forward, armed forces personnel will be using these policies more and more. And my aim and the aim of my team is to make sure that those policies are fit for purpose, that they're the best they can be to support our armed forces.
And what policies are available just now?
So at the moment, we have under the overall umbrella heading of flexible working, we've got two types. So we've got something called alternative working arrangements. These allow regular service personnel and reserve service personnel to vary the normal routine, timing or location of their work while still maintaining full-time output. So they allow service personnel a degree of freedom when attempting to balance their work and personal life. And there are three particular types of alternative working arrangements. So we have remote working, we have compressed working, you may have heard that called compressed hours elsewhere, and we have variable start and finish times. We also, under the same heading of flexible working, we have flexible service. So this allows regular service personnel to request legally protected temporary changes to when they work or how long they are away from their usual workplace. And of course, with all of this, it's subject to operational capability. So the flexible service arrangements available are part-time working, so personnel can reduce their work routine by 20% or 40%, equating roughly to 1 or 2 days in a 5-day working week, and or they can restrict their separation. So the amount of time they are separated from the home base, they can restrict that to no more than 35 days in a year. And the idea of this is to protect service personnel from lengthy periods away from the home base and the family.
And did you say that these have been available for sort of the last 6 to 8 months or longer than that?
The alternative working arrangements I mentioned, some of those policies have actually been available since 2005. Flexible service we introduced on the 1st of April 2019.
And what's uptake been like?
In terms of flexible service, what we found in our research, working with other nations that had introduced flexible service, was that no more than 1% of the total armed forces population took up these policies. So in our case, the UK armed forces currently, since we introduced the policy, something like nearly 360 service personnel and their families have benefited from flexible service. In terms of alternative working arrangements, looking at some of the figures, between April 2020 and March 2021, roughly 26,000 service personnel benefited from alternative working arrangements.
And what benefit does that in turn give to defence?
You have service personnel who report back, you know, being able to undertake these arrangements, less stress about, you know, worrying about balancing their work and family life. So that in turn it helps to improve performance in the workplace. It gives line managers more flexibility in how they use their people. And it also gives line managers more oversight of the sort of range of skills that are available to them in the workplace as they move people around to fill in as people are working flexibly or working under alternative working arrangements.
And I suppose a lot of this is down to wanting to retain good personnel and offering them something that means that they think, yeah, do you know what? I'll stay here for another 10 years or so.
Absolutely. I mentioned earlier that the fact that something like nearly 360 service personnel and their families have benefited from flexible service. Now, to the outsider, that might seem like a small figure. However, to us, that's an important figure because that is 360 service personnel who would otherwise have left the department because previously our system didn't have the flexibility to allow them to make changes in their lifestyle, accommodate those, and continue to work. So that's 360 people that we would have otherwise lost, would have to replace them and retrain people at great cost. But also importantly, it's long-term recruitment and retention that these policies are aimed at. And survey information shows us that people have said that the availability of flexible working arrangements has been a key factor in them staying on in the armed forces. And also for future potential recruits to the armed forces, this is going to make the armed forces a more attractive employer because more and more the research shows that people will be looking for the availability of flexible working arrangements as a norm, as a normal part of the terms of engagement for coming into the armed forces. So that will hopefully attract more people to the armed forces and also a more diverse range of people from the society that we represent. But to be clear, in terms of availability from the outset, what I would say is that when somebody joins, naturally there is initial phase one and two training that they would have to go through. They would then familiarise themselves within their service. So it wouldn't be immediately that they could take up flexible working. They'd need to do their professional training first, go into their service, and then after that point, they'd be able to take up flexible working.
How do you manage the challenges? How do you manage explaining to people that while they have this incredible opportunity, there have got to be some boundaries?
I think by being clear from the outset of what the limits are to this policy. One of the limits I just mentioned was about the fact that you can't come straight away into the armed forces and start working flexibly. You need to do the professional training. You need to be familiarised with your service before you can then start flexible working. So we make that very clear in the rules and regulations. Also, we've always been clear right from the very start that what must come first is military capability. So whenever a line manager or a board is considering somebody for flexible service or flexible working arrangements, the question at the top of their minds is, will this affect our ability to deliver military capability? If it does, then we have to think very carefully about whether or not to agree to an application. Equally, we've been very clear from the start that not every post in the armed forces will be able to be used for alternative work arrangements or flexible working. Clearly, there are some specialist niche roles that require the individual to be physically at the place of work. So there are some roles where it's not going to work, but there are a lot of roles where it will. And our policy from the outset says that our aim will be to allow everybody who applies to work flexibly, but at the same time, recognise that there are some roles where it might not work.
On the very rare occasions where you might have an application which is so unique, which involves spousal health or children's health or something like that, and there's a lot of emotion at play as well, but the Ministry of Defence has decided that, exactly as you identify, that particular role, there are major difficulties with flexible working. What processes and what support systems are in place to help those people who you are going to have to say, I'm sorry, it's not going to work on an operational basis for you?
First of all, there is a, within flexible service, there is actually an appeals process. So if a request was initially turned down, the individual does have a right to appeal. So they can go through that process. If that was unsuccessful, then I think there are other channels that the individual could go through in discussion with their line manager. You know, it could be a welfare issue. And as you know, we have a really good welfare network for the armed forces. So it could be that direction that the individual takes with the support of their line manager. It could be that it's something that is, it's affecting their commitment so much so, and it might be a long-term thing, that there might be other avenues. For instance, considering reserve service. So, you know, completely reducing the 100% commitment and looking on a more longer-term basis to serve under a reduced commitment through reserve service. So there are a lot of alternative channels that an individual could look at if they really needed to reduce their commitment without completely leaving the armed forces.
And in your experience, have most line managers, most members of senior management, some of whom this will be quite a new thing, you know, compared to when they joined the armed forces, have you noticed that the reaction and the support has been forthcoming?
We have, yes. So anecdotal feedback and statistical feedback suggests that is the case. Right from the start, we were clear that or aware that flexible service, flexible working wouldn't work unless senior management were properly brought into it. So in developing the policies, we worked really closely with the armed forces at all levels to ensure that the policies that we were developing and introducing were going to work, were going to be fair for the individual, didn't disadvantage the individual, but at the same time, didn't leave the department vulnerable to, you know, people being away and potentially affecting military capability. And there was a phrase we always use, which is designed by the services for the services. And, you know, as we move along, people are going to want slightly different things. The only way we can do that is to be able to look at data, analyze that data, see how the policy is being used, and make changes where we need to. So my plea to service personnel on alternative working arrangements is please, please, please do record those working arrangements on JPA, the military HR system. That's going to allow us to access the data and make informed decisions about changes to the policy in the future.
That was William Lynn from Defence's Modernising Terms of Service team, talking us through the flexible working offer. You can find up-to-date information about the flexible working opportunities in the armed forces in the Flexible Working and You booklet. Find it online by searching Defence Flexible Service. Look out for more episodes in the series. You can find them on Defence's internal channels, as well as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and bfbs.com/podcasts.